You're listening to the Collaboration Twins podcast with me, Kelly.
And me, Rob. I hope you guys enjoy it.
And welcome back to this month's episode of the Collaboration Twins podcast. And I believe we're on episode 12 of season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Changed intro there. We're now doing it monthly.
Yep.
So, yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is, but I feel like we've got a better life balance with it all. 100%. And I feel like we've got more to bring, like more substance. Like as we said before, once you've hit the main topics like birth, feeding, weaning, sleeping, things like that, the toddler years.
I think it's normalizing it a bit. So like the monthly episodes that people can probably listen to and go, that's happening to me right now.
And also, it's a big commitment to ask our twin parents to listen to us every week.
I know, who would want to?
So, this week, before we get cracking, and the theme is fussy eaters.
Yeah,
I think we've all been through that. What have you noticed been going on with the twins this month?
Language development. More like proper language, not as in they can talk and name stuff, like communication development. So actually, like, yeah, they've probably seen the video I put in the group the other day. It was like they A, B, C, and they'd like they'd learnt all their sort of learning that sort of stuff, and I don't know, you're actually having a little mini conversation with them now.
Erin has got this really clever trick where she'll like ask for something and then you repeat it back to her and she's like, okay, as if like you've come up with the idea. So like today she's going like and signing biscuit. I was like, oh, do you want a biscuit? Okay. Like, no, that was your idea, Erin. But it's like she's got this clever way of making it sound like I've asked her for a biscuit. Cracks me up. But she's like, definitely Erin is ahead of Ted. But she's like putting phrases together now. She's way past that one word,
yeah,
and you can actually understand what she's saying.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. Like she'll say things like, sorry, Ted, come on, Daddy. She's putting little phrases together, isn't she?
Yeah. Like night night, Daddy.
Night night, Daddy. Yes.
But what I found interesting with it though, because we've seen the development milestones with Erin doing that, we can see that although Ted's slightly behind it, he's developing, you know what I mean? I think you said the other day, it was like, oh, he's about a month behind what Erin was like.
Yeah.
But he's slowly catching up. But I do think that as they develop out, they turbocharge each other.
But Ted, let's not, you know, deny the fact he fully understands. He just can't verbalise it the same way that Erin can. And he's definitely got a lot of words. He's still at the very much like up.
Yeah.
Book.
Yeah.
Biscuit, cracker, he's at the one word stage, whereas Erin's
No. Everything is no for him.
Whereas
Erin, sandwich, he goes no and go, it's a sandwich, mate. So, it's fucked up on this one.
Yeah. Whereas Erin, I think, is actually putting phrases together, isn't she? But she's also, and we need to be careful of this, because she's repeating. And I do like the old F bomb every now and again.
Yeah.
And yeah, I need to watch my language. What was that I said the other day? They were doing something and I was like, oh, can I have a kiss? And he was going, no. And I went, brutal. And they both went, brutal.
Well, I'm finding you're right in what you're saying there. I'm having to stop swearing so much. It's a difficult one.
And Erin understands the term naughty. So I never call them naughty. I say that they have naughty behaviour. So if like they're throwing food, I go, oh, that's naughty behaviour. And Erin has started to say, she goes, pushes Ted and then goes, naughty. And I go, yes, that's naughty behaviour.
And I think
she's a clever little sausage.
Themselves and like they're running around and they're climbing. They're just more developing, aren't they? Like up and down the stairs.
Yeah, they go up and down the stairs independently now. What I love about it, so if you've seen the reel, I've taught them to go downstairs backwards just because it's safer.
And I'll be honest with you, what I find funny is Erin took to the point where she's like one step down at a time. Ted goes down literally, like, oh, I'm on my belly now, and just slides down.
I know, it's funny.
And it's funny until Erin goes first, and then Ted waits a little bit, and then it's like he's like taking her out on the trying to take her out on the stairs while him sliding past. It's funny.
Although I've always said to them, safely, come down safely. So they both go, safely, safely. That's what I mean. All those words, they're saying so much now.
Well, it, like on the Fridays when I take them to nursery, I get them all ready by the front door, and there's a little step down from the front door. So I go, wait, and one of them waits, and I put one down, wait, one down. It's like, hand. So they wait for me when I do that. So hand. And Erin now goes, hand, hand, before I even ask that. Walk her down a little bit of the steps, and then we get to the bigger steps. And one waits at the top, and then I put one down, and then I do the same thing. And it's like, you can see that they're understanding the communication. Erin especially would be more like, because of that little bit more development, she like waits for her hand. She knows that that is a signal that I'm not going to run off.
Yeah.
Whereas Ted's a bit like, I'm going to test you, Daddy.
I think that's a really good point and like teaching bit you've done, whereas you taught them the word wait and what waiting is, because waiting is essentially like turn taking as well, which we do. We go like Ted's turn, Erin's turn.
Yeah.
And following on from that is waiting, being able to wait.
Yeah, I mean, and they do that really well, especially when they know it's important to do it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's not, we don't just say wait for the sake of doing it.
No.
Like they know that there's an element of why we're asking them to do that.
I think we're getting to that point now where it's difficult carrying them both at the same time. And I've, in the last couple of months, started, maybe the last 6 weeks, really starting to like put the pram away and hold their hands and walk them in somewhere.
Mm.
And when I pick them up from nursery on Friday, because it's a lighter evening, I put their coats and bags on and I walked them down the slope and put them in the car. And little things like that are starting to be a bit of a game changer. But it's knowing when you've got to feel confident as a parent, do it in the right situations, like it wasn't busy, it's still light. If you don't have a go, you never know.
I mean,
I'm going to use that. If you don't have a go, you never know. It's about, you know, I think they continuously surprise me of how independent and how much they know. And I can't forever be carrying them or putting a pram out. And I'm at that stage now, like earlier, was like, oh, let's let them walk back to the car, which was going fine until Ted had a meltdown.
Yeah, Ted didn't want to come from the playground, so.
So, yeah, we're also at that stage, aren't we? I mean, they're...
He dropped to the floor on that one. I was like, no, let's go back in the pram.
I've put a post up about this today. They're actually 21 months this week. And I've got to a point where it's just ridiculous counting months now. I now say they're nearly two.
Yeah.
So they're nearly two now. And I think that's about the right stage to be allowing to be a bit more independent. And also for us, it makes life easier if they can just hold our hands and go for a walk. But we built up to those moments, like walking in the park. We used to practice holding hands and you can tell when they're ready.
Well, I've done it on a Friday mornings because it's obviously lighter for me taking the kids to the nursery. You know, I get them in the car doing that process I just said about. But then the other side of it, I've always got a certain spot that I try and park in the car park, drop them off at nursery.
Mm.
And I always get one of them out and I get them down the other, or in your car, it was a bit different the other day, but in the BMW, because it's a coupe, I unstrap the furthest one, put them into the footwell, unstrap the next one. So they're in the footwells together.
Yeah.
And then I independently get one out, put the coat on them, and they go, wait. And then they wait next to me whilst I get the other one out, do the coat, and then I then zip them both up and then get the bags and then go bags, and they know the process, and then I go hand, and then I walk on across the car park, up the steps, like, but again, the steps are quite funny because Erin goes up singular and Ted's like, no, fuck this, I'm going to try and go like one step, he's like 1 foot at a time.
Yeah.
So he's like dangling on and I'm like, but it's again, it's that routine of familiarity with them that I've found that they're now used to doing that. Like they almost expect it. They know they're in that car park. Even the other day when Julie was there shouting through the window going, twins, a lot. Erin still knew to wait until we left.
Mm. Interestingly, because when I have them both out, when I put them in the car, I open the door, I pop one in the footwell and then one in the car seat nearest to me. and the one who I put in the footwell automatically goes over to the next car seat. Is that something you do with them, or is that just something they've learned?
Yeah, it's because I've got to do it because it's a coupe.
Yeah. But they're so good. They're so good at it, aren't they?
I open the door, I put one in the footwell, and then I get the other one and put them in the car seat. And then the other one starts to climb over anyway now.
Yeah.
But I've got used to doing that because it's crazy to then try and do one in the footwell and then try and come around the other side. I've had to adapt it.
And I think you probably did that before me. I think I've still been holding on to that fear. Well, it's ridiculous because I work with autistic 4, 5, and 6-year-olds and I take them to like the park and the allotment and stuff. But yet my own children almost holding back and making things almost too difficult for me, and just having that time to actually let them be independent and try things. And as I said, like, you know, the walking hands, I used to practice walking hands around the park, and they weren't ready to begin with, were they? They just want to let go of your hand. As soon as you see that actually they can walk holding your hand, that's when you know you can try things. But yeah, definitely I'd say if you've got, you know, twin toddlers approaching that 2-year-old sort of phase between 18 months to 2 years old, start, you know, do it safely. Have faith in them.
It's getting them to do the understanding of all of it. You know, we spoke about even to like today when we was like, should we take them for a walk and not take them for a walk, and then it was a new place, and we soon realized that if we'd done that without the pram,
It was too big a walk.
It would have been a too big a walk. But so next time we know that's the case. So we now know, okay, if we're going to go down there, there's a smaller walk. That green route would have been fine. It's just exploring it, isn't it? And learning. Like, you might go there for the first time and it might be horrendously shit. But at least you've learned, like, oh, next time we don't do that. What can we do better?
I've got a great story for... And Kay, if you're listening... missed this. She missed the comedy gold. So we went to Soft Play and I parked up and I said, I'm not going to get the pram out. I'm going to walk them in. And they walked in beautifully and they held my hand until they found there was a dog park in the cafe. Ted lost it. He was so excited about the dogs. But anyway, I got him on track, did Soft Play. On the way back, I said, I'm just going to change Erin. So I've taken them into the disabled toilet, and it's one of those, if you're watching on YouTube, it's a hook, not a turn lock. Anyway, I'm changing Erin. I see at the corner of my eye that Ted has learned, oh, I just pull this up and it unlocks. So he's opened it and then gone, doggies, and started running towards these dogs. I've picked Erin up, bum on show, ran out, grabbed Ted, literally like yanked him back with one arm. This other mum was walking with her pushchair, just like gave me the nod as if to say, we've all been there. Got him in. I was like, right, here's some juice, here are my keys, distracted with anything, and as quickly as I could changed Erin. I said to Kay, did you see that? She had missed them, at which point she actually made a really good point. She said, imagine if Erin had a poo, because if she had pooed, I would have just had to run and get shit all over me, because in that situation you've got to go. So I learned something there. And interestingly, I was recalling this to one of my twin mum friends. She was like, oh no, you wait till you have the twins in the toilet with you and you're on the toilet and they learn to open the door. So yeah, I think that was a bit of a sign of things to come. But it's one of those, if you don't try, you never know.
Yeah.
And I think if it had been one of those turny locked doors, I would have been fine. And if there wasn't a cafe with dogs in it that Ted could have run off to. But yeah, it was one of those moments, just running out of the toilet, child with their bum on show, grabbing the other one back, just, oh. Yeah.
And what else has happened this month? Like, how are you feeling now since our last monthly meeting?
Yeah, much better since the last one was about mum burnout.
Yeah, so what have you felt you've done this month differently?
So
you've had a busy month.
I have consistently all throughout January and February now, I've done my Saturday self-care, and I've done a park run. Because I used to go down the beach, didn't I? So now I go down the beach and I do a 5K run. And it's just about getting my body moving. And it's a really, if you've ever done a park run or you're thinking about it, it's a really supportive, inclusive, it's a really nice thing to be able to do. I mean, obviously you've got the elite runners, and then you've got the ones that are doing the couch to 5K walking running. But it's just really lovely. And so I get up on a Saturday morning, I go and do my 5K run along the beach. When I wake up in the morning, I'm doing my daily gratitude again. I've started doing a 10-minute meditation. So as soon as the twins go down and we know they're sleeping, put the earphones on, I just do a 10-minute meditation, sometimes 20. I think they've been the biggest impacts for me, just focusing on gratitude, a bit of me time on a Saturday, a bit of meditation, and just lowering my expectations over things, just being kinder to myself.
Yeah.
Which is easier said than done.
I've seen a note, I've noticed you going from that, the effort of going for a run to now it being sort of if I don't want to miss this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even this week when you've been really ill and you felt better, like this morning, like getting out there still feeling groggy, I was like going, you're like, I'm going to go and do this because it will probably clear it.
And naturally, yeah, I have had a rotten cold all week. I do surprisingly feel better. There's something about I run along the beach, our 5K, which is partly why I love it so much. Something about the sea, fresh air. And it wasn't a fast. And actually, for the first time ever, I walked it because I just had nothing in me. And I do feel better. So there's something in it. Right. Shall we, just seeing along, we have rambled on a little bit. Shall we crack on with our theme of today, fussy eaters? So I'm going to say most, because there's probably going to be some sets of twins out there that are just beautiful eaters. There's always an exception to the rule. But we have just come out of a phase where Ted and Erin have started being really fussy with their food. And we just want to normalise that that happens. And most children, twins, babies all go through it. And firstly, we kind of did to get through it.
Let's normalise. How fucked off are you when you've got the expense of making the food, producing it all, cooking it, and they don't fucking eat it? Let's just normalise this as parents. Like, how fucking annoying is it?
It's annoying.
Because you're like, do you know what? That's going cold and that looks actually really good. I'll eat it instead.
And Joe, what's worse is when you've really thought about, oh, they're really like that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, back when it started, they love broccoli and cheese and pasta. So I made them what I call Hulk pasta, which is basically you cook the broccoli to its mashable, mash it in with some cheese spread or just some grated cheese, and then mix in the pasta. And I call it Hulk pasta. They love that. But, you know, and then they just one day, nah, not eating this now.
What do you reckon here? Do you reckon they just get bored, they explore new taste buds?
I think at first, when you first start weaning, quite commonly most babies eat anything, and I think it must just be because all you've had is milk for the first six months of your life. Like, anything's good. And then I think they must start to get a bit of a preference. They start to get a bit of a voice and they realise that they can say no and that they have a choice.
Well, even this morning, I put out toasted honey on toast. Because I always think, like, you know, Saturday mornings is toast, jam thing I've always done with them. And that did, no. I even asked them, do you want toast or Weet-Bix? Toast. No, don't want it. Ted literally scrubbed up in his hands and gave it to me. Literally was like, Daddy. He's like,
Here's what I think of your breakfast.
Yeah, literally scrumped it all up, just chucked it on my hands and was like, Daddy, Weet-Bix. And I was like, so I literally put that in the bin, got the Weet-Bix out, and then he was like, yeah, and it just smashed all the Weet-Bix.
Do you know who we have to blame for this? My mum. Because, and by the way, this is not how I was raised. So, mum, if you're listening, not happy about this. She made them a dinner once, and they were like, we want baked beans, and we put it into the fridge. So do you know what my mum did? She took away their dinner and she made them baked beans. And now she's taught them that, oh, look, it's like a cafe. I can just select what I want.
Yeah.
And there's no repercussions.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. Like, go on there Thursdays. I know for a fact. Like, they turn up. She's like, do you want toast? I was like, they tried to have toast this morning. I didn't want it. She was like, okay, I'll give them toast. See if they want toast. And they eat nanny's toast. They eat nanny's honey toast with white bread and everything like that. And then she's like, oh, I baked some cakes yesterday. So they got little cupcakes, salty caramel cupcakes at fucking 10 o'clock in the morning.
And then she wonders why they don't sleep.
Yeah, and she wonders why they haven't slept all day. So, yes, because of high sugar.
The thing is, though, Rob, when I was a kid, do you know what I would have been told? That's your dinner, like it or lump it.
I mean, I wasn't getting
baked beans.
I'm going to be honest with you, yeah. I was of a generation where my mum and dad gave me a little soapy bar of soap in the mouth if I was rude to them and stuff like that. Smack on the bum. And it was like, you're left out. I mean, let's be honest here. I'm going to be honest in this one. And it's a common story amongst my family. They call it Chinese panda. For listeners out there, you can have this comedy gold, right? When I was a child, it was like, you know, your meat and veg, mince, you eat what you've given on the table, and that was it.
You eat all of it as well.
And you've got to eat all of it, and you can't get for a table. And I remember having a Chinese once, and we had this other, like, second lounge area with this, like, white corner thing that my mum and dad got from friends. And I remember piling on my plate of this Chinese, thinking, yeah, I'll eat of this. And at the time, I didn't eat, like, the sweet and sour sauce. So I remember putting it in my mouth, thinking, don't like this. But I knew for a fact I had to eat it all. So I was like, when am I going to do this? And there was this massive old panda that my oldest brother had from me as a child. And it was like old, deteriorated, had holes in it. So I thought, well, I put a bit of Chinese under the seat of his chair, corner chair, and I stuffed the panda with the rice and the sauce and the bit of the meats. And so I went back into my room, empty plate. It was only like a few weeks later, my dad was like, what's this smell like lingering around the thing? It was like mouldy Chinese. And it was this panda, this whole panda been stuffed by Chinese. I'm telling it because it was going to probably come out on our wedding day. Like, my dad always comes up about it, but stuffing a panda, that's the level. See what I mean? Like, twins, don't get that.
No, but I think we were that generation, isn't it? Where it's like, you eat what's been given, be grateful for it.
Be grateful, and I'm going to give you everything. Boiled potatoes and
you
shitty
can't
mince
have, you can't
gravy.
Have pudding unless you've eaten. Ted Nerin.
Rice pudding.
Ted Nerin can put in whatever they want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do naturally go for it. And as I say, I think it's a case of they just start to get a bit of independence. They learn the word no. Your mother sabotages it. But, I mean, what we did is when they went through a phase of it, I think also it's quite common that they just don't seem to eat a lot. That's quite a common thing. And just go with it, because I was getting really worried for a while. And then randomly they just started picking up eating again. I just continued to offer food as I normally would, continued to offer snacks, make sure it was things they liked.
And also fill in stuff as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
But like and also if you're getting really worried about what they're eating, vitamins, I've seen there's a spray you can get, that you just a vitamin spray on their tongue. That sounds amazing. I've yet to find it, but people have been sending it to me. I've got just vitamin drops. And I've been just mixing it in with their water.
We'll
come to that in a minute. We used to mash it in with their yogurt, so it used to hide it. Because they went for a big phase where, again, my mum gave them juice one day, so they wouldn't drink water anymore. All they would drink is juice.
I know. And when they started drinking water again, Nanny has filtered tap water thingy on the fridge, isn't it? So I remember giving Ted some water. He was like, looking at me like, this is not filtered degree.
This is not Evian.
This isn't Evian. Oh, this is not a filtered water at a particular temperature. Like, this is a bit warmer than what I'm used to. What is this shit? Take it away.
This is what?
But what's nice, I'll say actually, is
Athorn Spring.
When I Peckham Springs, isn't it? When I sit in the mornings and sometimes I have my yogurt with that mix that you've got, it's quite nice. I sit there and I eat it as well. So they've got used to eating sort of more natural yogurt than your.
And that's one of the biggest things you can do. I think, excuse me, when you have the twins, they tend to eat a lot earlier, especially if you're like working. And so you don't often eat with them. And one of the biggest tips I was given, eat with them. And that's a great way to also model how you use cutlery, because they're watching you. So we started eating a bit more with them, didn't we?
Yeah.
And that made a difference. Them seeing us eating it encouraged them to eat, and also really started to improve
their cutlery this morning,
using.
Isn't it? You know, like they had their bit of breakfast. No, it's not small, lunchtime.
Yeah, they had lunch with us.
Yeah, and then
our brunch, they had lunch.
And they were eating at the same time with us, isn't it? It's amazing, like modelling, isn't it? Like, off topic, sitting on a sofa, isn't it? I've got a thing about, even now, it's a bit weird, I've got to think about, oh, I have to have a pillow on me when I sit on the sofa. And both of them do that.
It's funny. You'll be, they pick up a lot from you. You're their role models, aren't you? How they learn. So if you're getting some fussy eaters, like we always have Sunday dinner together, which is a lovely thing. As much as you can, eat together as a family, model it, eat the same things as them. Because then you're also modelling how to use cutlery. And one of the things that I did is like, and I think it was the Hulk pasta example. So I made them the Hulk pasta. They refused to eat it. So fine, took it away and just give them some something bland like toast. Like I know they'd eaten breakfast and snacks and fruit throughout the day. So I know they'd eaten. Gave them the toast and the yogurt and that was it. And then the next, at lunchtime, I bought the pasta out again. And I was like, it's this. And I think the second time they ate it, I did that a few times where if they didn't eat the dinner that night, I'd present it again the next day. And they started to get the idea of, oh, it's not a buffet. I just get a bit of toast and it comes out again. So I think eating with them, try just presenting it again the next day. And I've seen people that have done this like 2 or 3 days on the trot, like, no, this is your dinner. This is what you've got to eat. I'm not very good with like food and weaning. That's, I'll say, my weak area, but it worked for us.
Should we also put it out though, with Sunday dinners, it's not the romance of like you thinking it's going to be this lovely family time sometimes. Let's normalise it, come on.
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't, isn't it?
No, so this week it wasn't, was it, Rob?
Sometimes it was horrendous. Like I made. You had a little bit of a thing over it all. My ego jumped into all of it, fully knowing that you were more qualified than me in knowing Ted had a full meltdown, wasn't it?
In your defence, though, I'd cooked, by the way, this was like the best roast dinner I've cooked in a long time. There was cauliflower cheese. I nailed the roast potatoes. There was chicken, the gravy was on point because I used the chicken.
Roast potatoes weren't on point.
They were. I used the chicken juices in the gravy. We had roasted carrot with balsamic and thyme. Oh, it was great. So we like sat down to eat dinner, but by the time I finished, it was like 6 o'clock, and that was really
too late
for them. So Ted started having a meltdown as soon as he saw it was dinner. So I said, just put him on meat to calm down. You're like, no, because it's going to make him spoil. My argument was, when he's that dysregulated, he isn't eating dinner. And our goal is we need him to be calm so he eats. So I took him out, got his dinner next to me, ate mine. He ate sitting on me happily. So he had his dinner, I had my dinner, was eating. As soon as he was calm and he was eating on his own, I put him back in the chair and then he carried on eating on his own. He just needed that calm, that centre, that me for a little bit. To like realize that actually I'm hungry, this is the food I want, I'm with mummy and daddy, I'm safe. That wasn't your view on it though, was it?
No.
And quite rightly, Erin, she noticed that, oh, Ted's on mummy. So Erin was like, I'll sit on daddy. So you were like, now I've got Erin on me. So yeah, it wasn't the roast dinner experience that you had planned. But my argument was Ted calmed down. He did eventually eat his dinner. They both sat in their own chairs at the end and ate it. Isn't that the end goal?
Yeah. No. And I'm being honest. Like, I had a little bit of a moment and then I was like, okay, I realise you are the expert more than me.
I think I was cocking out if you were like, missed argument. Oh, you know everything, don't you? And I was like, yes, I am more qualified.
Yeah, I am more qualified. Like, but Sundays is a very important day for me when it comes to that sort of side to it. You know what I mean? Like, I go for a run and I've always made sure the afternoon is more for family time. That makes it more my time, if that makes sense. But obviously, 6 o'clock. And I mean, if you're that qualified, you've known that, you know, 6 o'clock in the evening is not a good time to be feeding the kids. I'm just saying.
I underestimate how long it took to get caressed. Some other tips. So I put this out to the Instagram and Facebook community. We've got a couple of other really good tips as well, because as I said, this is not my strong point. Just sharing what was normal for us. Kay suggested, and I have done this, she said, get the old cheese grater out and you sneak those veggies in. So grate some veggies in with regular food. So one of our go-to snacks, which is they love. Basically, if you hide anything in potato and cheese, they're going to eat it. So I've been known to mash up broccoli and potato with a bit of cheese and they'll eat it. Same with carrot. So we do these fritters and you literally grate a whole courgette, grate a whole carrot, grate some potato and grate a little bit of cheese. And then literally just add 2 heaped tablespoons of flour, flatten them out and air fry them. I think the mixture of like cheese and potato hides the fact that there's carrot and courgette in there. They love them fritters.
And it's not a lot of cheese either.
No, you don't need it. You don't need it.
And even potato, it's a good mix.
But it's really quick and easy to do. It's literally, what is that? Carrot, courgette, potato. You've grated in there. And then, as I said, just like.
But even things like when we do the pancakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like banana pancakes.
And you grate apple into it now as well, don't
you?
Yeah,
like apple. Like you can get some quite cool stuff in it that they don't realise it and they think it's brilliant. Without it being like, I don't know, like a normal pancake.
As I said, that Hulk pasta is normally one. Bolognese is another one to be able to sneak loads of stuff in because you can put tomatoes. Again, you can grate hidden veggies in there. I think I've like put aubergine in before.
Can I make a random one? I just thought of the top of my head. Like when it comes to like food and stuff, like. I take them a lot too on Tuesdays. If I'm not seeing mum on Tuesdays, I go to the Marston place down the road, don't I? And I always was a bit dubious of places like that. And I might sound a bit snobby for any listeners out there, but like my brother's got a gastro pub. It's like a proper high end gastro pub. So any pub that doesn't serve food like his is shit. But so, and we've been to like the tables out there. No disrespect to tables, but we've been there and it's not the best of food. You know what I mean? It's very, very basic food. So I tarnished the Marsden pubs a similar way, but that's opposite Tesco. So sometimes I go down there and if you're trying to, you want to get the kids out as a singular parent, not singular parent, but one of you. I've had great success down there. I'm just going down, they've got a little play area and they're just very accommodating towards families.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I took you down and you start to realise why I come down there. It's because it's like, you can order from your table, the food's freshly cooked. They've got a good little menu for the children's side to it. They've got a little play area that you can occupy them in. And I go down there quite comfortably as a dad on it, on their own. And even them, you know, I haven't got a push chair in there, pick them up, go in there. And they almost got used to me going in there on that Tuesday or Sunday, just Saturday evening, afternoons, isn't it? Just to get out of the house. So I know it's obviously a bit off topic, but
eating in different places
sometimes that just gives them a bit of variety.
I think, and another good one actually that someone shared, I think Hannah it was, she said give them something new alongside something they already love so they can explore it.
Yeah,
and you know they're not going to go hungry. So say that you know that they love strawberries and you want to introduce them to mango, put the strawberries alongside the mango so they can eat the strawberries, explore the mango, see if they like it. I think that's a really good tip.
Yeah,
but I think when you become a parent you do worry, am I feeding them enough, is it nutritious enough, are they eating enough?
Yeah,
but from our experience and from my nieces, they do go through phases where it appears they live off fuck all.
Yeah, but
but then the eating does pick up again. They must go through phases.
So, like, the bit we can talk about there is, right, from a general generalisation of who we are as human species, we're told that we need to eat till we're full. So we've got the normalisation that is the case.
Yeah.
But whereas we don't really necessarily eat till... We don't need to eat until we're full. It's like 80% capacity. So sometimes you look at a meal and I haven't eaten much of it, but then I forget sometimes that they are tiny kids. They've got tiny bellies compared to us as adults. So their calorie intake and their food intake doesn't need to be the same.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, we'll have 2 Weetabixes, they'll have 1. That's still a massive amount that they're taking in for breakfast compared to us, you know, like, the burn rate that what we need to go through, like their yogurts, even just them having 1 egg each you know, as food is quite a big amount, yeah, you know what I mean?
Big protein.
So, like, sometimes you might look at it and go, they haven't really eaten much, but, like, just to normalise that, they are little human beings. They have tiny little stomachs.
And I think, like, the portion size is, like, look at your hand, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, a hand's worth of broccoli, a hand's worth of beans.
Yeah.
I saw a post once, it actually made me feel a lot better, and it was, like, for fussy eaters, it's, like, hummus, baked beans, these count as worth your five a day. I was thinking, thank fuck, because the twins love some hummus, and they love baked beans. Mm. So...
But it's the calories part to it.
Yeah.
So, like, we were exploring about hummus. Like, a 1/6 of hummus is, I think it was like 180 odd calories.
Yeah.
So, even if we get a small amount of hummus inside them, the calories are required for the body to burn.
And hummus is chickpeas.
You know what I mean? So, like, there's an element of that, of it. It's the fuel you're given to them.
Yeah.
Rather than actually the food. Like, yeah, like mixing up of, like, you know, your vitamins and minerals and nutrients and stuff like that, making sure that's there. But if you're looking at them thinking they haven't really eaten much, like, think about what can I give them protein-wise, because protein's a good development. It's fuller for them. They're taking it longer.
Yeah.
It's good for the body, etc.
And what you were saying about actually eating somewhere different to make it more of a variety. So I said earlier that the twins got into this really bad habit where they'd only drink juice. And I used to make it like mega, mega weak. I got to a point where I was like, you need to drink something. Is I had a water bottle with a straw. They would quite happily drink out of my one. Mm. And that's why I was like, we need to get you a bottle similar to mine. And we did, didn't we? We got them those bottles. And then I make a big deal of it, water, water, water. And I actually let them drink my water, which you were like, you shouldn't let them do that. But me doing that and modelling drinking water in this fancy cup, I was like, look, I've got you a cup like mummy's, water, water. They've actually gone back to water again now. So I think there's something to be said about that modelling again, but also something new and exciting. If they like drinking, especially when you think about that transition, when they go from bottle, you give them a sippy cup. When do I give them a different type of bottle with a straw? Mm. When do I give them the one like we've got now? And I know of people that have, you know, gone through different types of cups to find the cup that they like and they can drink out of and that they're going to drink from. Sometimes you do just have to go out there and explore what beaker, what cup, what bottle are they going to drink from? Mm. But I mean, be persistent. Don't give up. Don't think, oh, that's it, my kids don't drink water, because they can. And I think, as I said, the big thing there was modelling it, which we said earlier. If they're not eating certain foods, eat with them, model it, sneak that veg in where you can.
It has to go back to what we've said in the past, like, you know, like the sleep routines and all the other bits that follow behind it. It's the consistency towards the effort.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm gonna be a bit harsh here, but that's where you see a lot of parents don't do it right. In the fact that they give up early.
Yeah.
It's like one time only, and that's it. Like they ain't gonna do that. No. It's like you gotta remember, like, their brain is developing, so it's reinforcing these things, these routines, why you're doing it, like new different tastes and stuff like that. It's not like my kid doesn't do that. And it's like They need to get used to it.
And it took me a good couple of weeks of keep repeating the same meal until they got the idea of that's it. And I didn't do it with anything new, by the way. I did it with things that I know they were eating before.
Yeah.
If it had been something new and they didn't like it, fair enough. And as a rule of thumb, a child has to try something at least 10 times, they say, before you can say they don't like it. So I just keep introducing it in different ways. Like the aubergine, I did it like in the air fryer. I mixed it in with a bolognese. I gave it to them on the side. I slowly kept trying to do it. But I'm talking about that example with the Hulk pasta, where they had been eating it, and then just refused. Mm. I know you like it because you've been eating it for months. You're being fussy. So I'm going to keep repeating it until you get the idea of that's your meal. And I didn't starve them. I gave them really something bland, like toast and yogurt. Plus, I know that in the day, they've been eating. They're very good with fruit, let's be honest. Mm. I know they've eaten things like Weetabix and fruit. They were back on water. They've had some milk. You know, they've had their little snacks. I know they weren't hungry. Just to really be clear there, if I had given them something new for the first time, they didn't like it, I wouldn't keep repeating that meal, because that is harsh. Yeah. I would then just introduce that food in different forms in different places.
But like, even today, if you think about it, like, we're now get to that point where we're like, do you want baked beans or peas, weren't it? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I want peas.
Yeah.
And then even when we gave them that, we had the little, you know, chicken nuggets, the homemade chips, peas, like a little standardised meal. And at first you thought, oh, they're not eating the peas. But the chicken nuggets, they did the chips, and then they did the peas at the end.
No, rephrase that. They ate spoonfuls of ketchup.
Okay, yeah, we're not... Like, so spoonfuls of ketchup, then chicken nuggets, then chips. But then what it's like, you know, first I looked at the peas. Like, but I found funny, Erin, she was like taking it from that one section of the little bit to the next bit. And then she was like, oh, I'm going to eat those now. She was like, the peas are in the wrong section of my plate. So I'm going to move them over to the right plate, yes, part, and then I'm going to eat them.
But yeah.
So anything else?
No, that was all really just to normalise with fussy eaters. And also just to say that eating is not my area of expertise. Here's just how I've done it. And I mean, I've learnt this from opening up and saying to people, oh my God, it's not working. Here is what people suggested, and that's what worked to me. Someone suggested to keep repeating this again. If it's a food you know they've been eating, they suddenly stopped, you give it to them again the next day and the day after until they get the idea. Someone said about grating veggies in with food and hiding it. Someone else said about sitting down and eating and modelling it with them. This is all advice that I was given and worked for me. So I'm hoping it works for you. And then, yeah, I've just found things like making it exciting. Sometimes, like, I make out dinners really exciting by going, we're having, it's carrot fritters.
Like,
saying something in an exciting tone. They're like, yeah.
Routine is in, like, I find, you know, on the Saturdays when they used to come in here, like, you have a routine of those sort of things. Like, they find that exciting. I mean, like, just sitting down with me and know what it's about.
Yeah. Mixing it up sometimes.
Yeah, and I think...
And as you said, like, but it's persistence, isn't it? It's not going, oh, I've given up. Keep trying. I think that is just the key with anything with toddlers is you just have to keep trying different ways of of finding things. And as a backup, there's always vitamin backup. But you raise a really good point, which I think is quite nice, is
you
we make homemade chips really quick and easy. If you've got an air fryer, everyone's got an air fryer nowadays, homemade chips, just cut up some potatoes, a little bit of oil. We've never given them chips from a frozen chips. Nothing wrong with that if you do, by the way. But we just personally have always made our own chips.
But, even the ones that I've got, that guillotine thing, you know, the...
Oh, yeah, the potato slicer.
Yeah, I've forgotten what you call it. Some fancy word. My brother probably kill me not knowing it. But that's got, like, the almost the fries version of it. So just, like, you know, we got home after our walk today, sliced them, and they were like went quick. So they were, like, easy to cook in the air fryer.
Yeah. I mean... Getting some frozen food in is one of my tips.
Like frozen, like,
we get frozen chicken strips because we know it's
frozen,
like,
chicken strips.
We know it's good quality chicken. We make our own chips because it's just as quick, if not quicker, making your own chips than getting the frozen.
Broccoli, frozen peas, ones. Sweet corn.
Like. Frozen veg. Don't bother getting fresh veg for them. Just give them the frozen stuff because one, it's mushier.
And one,
two, it's quicker.
And also, it's probably packed full of more vitamins.
Yeah.
It's like frozen in a sauce, isn't it?
I've actually got, and if anyone's interested, as part of the How to Survive Twins the First Year course, I actually made something like 20 plus pages of quick and easy
meals.
So it starts off with weaning and then some of my, I call them no fuss recipes that I use. So if anyone's been listening and thinks actually I'm at a bit of a loose end, DM me or Instagram or however you connect with us.
DM me.
I'm more than happy to send that on because if you're listening at this point, you're well past the surviving the first 12 months.
Yeah.
So you don't need the course, but I'm more than happy to send you that, my recipe guide. And then also from that, you can adapt it and go what works for you.
Should we leave it there?
Let's leave it there and let's hope that this fussy eating phase that we've gone through has finished. We'll pick up about throwing food another time because that's another thing they went through a phase of doing.
Yeah.
When they finished,
bro,
just throwing it everywhere. But I think we could pick that up on next month's podcast.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good one.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Ciao.